Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the POTUS podcast. I am Adam Deaver, your future president of the United States, coming up here in November 2024. Vote for me. I've been on vacation for about a week. I was driving around this enormous country of ours, doing a little bit of canvassing, passing out some flyers, and ultimately going to see the Lord Huron at Red Rocks. So since I don't really have a new episode for you, and because Dr. Fauci is once again back in the news, and because people are just adamant that they didn't know any better in 2020, and because I'm still seeing people call ivermectin horse dewormer and all this other good stuff, I thought it would be a good time to revisit an old episode from the first run in 2020. I released this episode in March 2020, I want to say, like right before the shutdowns went into effect, or maybe it was after they had gone into effect. I can't quite remember off the top of my head. But much like now, I did this episode based on as if I were president. And I still stand by what I said in this podcast, that shutting down the economy was foolhardy and just completely idiotic. And the virus was politicized from the very get-go, and you'll hear that right at the beginning of this episode. And it was just a cluster F from the beginning. Our government is just run by buffoons. They're just idiots, all of them. You know, they shut down the economy for 2 years, shut everything down, and then they wonder why people are all on antidepressants and antipsychotics when you take away all of their coping mechanisms, all of their ways to gather and be involved in the community. Human beings are communal animals. They need movies. They need concerts. They need church. You stop people from going to funerals. You stop people from being with their loved ones as they were dying. And you wonder why. No one saw this coming, and you dump trillions of dollars into the economy to take care of all the bull that you created. And then you just throw up your hands and say, oh, we had no idea this was happening or gonna happen. We were given wrong information about ivermectin. By who, Chris? You couldn't do one Google search, you waste of space? Ugh. Don't let anyone forget what they did to us for COVID. I remember the first pitch of the vaccine was, oh, it's 98% effective against COVID. Well, you know what was 99% effective against COVID? My immune system. Crazy enough. But here you go, folks. Instead of ranting on what's already been done, I'm just going to let you hear me rant when it was being done. So enjoy this episode. I'll be back again shortly. I'm going to talk about my path to the White House. That's the next episode coming up, hopefully this week. So we'll be on the lookout for that. But in the meantime, enjoy this, my response to the COVID lockdowns of 2020.
Don't do this. 2.2 million people died.
Without social distancing and hand washing, 1.5 to 2.2 million people could die.
Coronavirus. COVID-19.
Flatten the curve.
COVID-19.
100,000 and 240,000.
U.S. officials estimate that 20 million Americans have been infected.
We have 6 deaths from the coronavirus, 18,000 deaths from the flu.
45,000 people a year die from automobile accidents.
We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself. We're not going to let the cure be worse than the problem.
I could literally give Donald J. Trump donkey of the day every day if I wanted to.
Coronavirus. You know about this whole thing.
And the Democrats' single talking point, and you see it, is that it's Donald Trump's fault, right?
That the president's focus is not the humanitarian potential for disaster, but on his political fate.
What brought you at the Globe to the point of going this far in your language, to the blood on his hands language that you've chosen?
But as the president fiddles, people are dying.
Florida looks like it's next.
There's no reason to panic at all.
This is a pandemic of historic proportion.
The president offers snake oil treatments that have the potential to do more harm than good.
This should not stop you from going about your life, should not stop you from going to Chinatown and going out to eat. I'm going to do that today myself.
Come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're, again, careful, safe, and come join us.
Destroyed forever.
You are destroyed forever.
And you'll never be back.
And you'll never be back.
Everything that you just said is insane.
Good day, everyone. I would like to start with some numbers for you to consider as we talk about COVID-19. Worldwide, there have been 16.1 million cases of COVID-19. There have been 645,000 total deaths. That is a 4% death rate. In the U.S., we sit at 4.25 million cases of COVID-19 and 149,000 people dead. There's a 3.5% death rate. The total population of the U.S. is 320 million people. You have a 0.04% chance of dying from COVID-19 in the U.S. You have a 1.3% chance of getting it in the United States. The numbers change a little bit if you look at the U.S. like you look at Europe. For instance, in Italy has a population of 60.3 million people. They have 246,000 cases and 35,000 deaths. Italy, of course, was one of the worst cases of the outbreak. In Italy, that's a 14% death rate. Comparatively, you have Texas. Texas only has a population of 29 million people. We currently have 329,000 cases of the illness and 5,000 deaths. That's only a 1.2% death rate. If you look at the state of New York, the Italy of the U.S. outbreak, if you will, New York has a population of 19.45 million people. They have 416,000 infections and suffered 32,000 casualties. That's an 8.1% death rate in New York. By the time you hear these numbers, they will be outdated. In fact, by the time I read them, they will have already changed, because much like our national debt, the numbers on COVID are constantly changing. Some of these changes seem inherently bad. The numbers of cases are going up across the U.S. But at the same time, the number of deaths are dropping. And not dropping as a relative percentage to the number of cases, the death rate is falling in spite of the added cases. This is a good thing. However, we must still maintain our awareness and concern of this pandemic. COVID-19 is still a very new virus, and our understanding of it is changing just as fast as the number of cases. This ever-evolving understanding of the pandemic naturally brings with it a certain amount of fear, worry, and uncertainty. But regardless where you might stand in terms of those uncertainties, do not let this virus be shaped by political ideology. A virus like this, all viruses in fact, couldn't care less about your specific circumstances, your skin color, your political leanings, your socioeconomic rung, your geographic location. COVID-19 cares about those factors about as much as a real estate agent cares about your budget ceiling.
an event such as this transcends pathetic political factions. Our actions in response to this entity that is motivated solely by existence and survival should be as clinical in its prevention, treatment, and eradication. Now, it is easy to second guess the actions of myself and my administration or sideline coach what plays or players I should be utilizing. And of course, hindsight is 20/20. Seemingly as infallible as hindsight, though, is the foresight that if we do nothing at all, the worst case scenarios will be thousands of times worse than those worst case models predict. So much like political ideology, fear cannot be the primary motivational factor to action. I refuse to let my actions or the actions of my administration be governed by pure and the mostly irrational emotional motivations of fear. If you react out of pure, unadulterated fear, more often than not, these fears are in hindsight often unfounded, and even more often than not, produce disastrous effects. Last time I looked around, Americans had tired of the excuse of, I feared for my life. If this all-encompassing excuse gives the government ad hoc powers over the populace during a national emergency, then we should be as equally as ready to capitulate to our law enforcers when they gun down somebody based entirely on this reasoning. Always remember Franklin's quote, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. However, always also remember that weighing liberty versus safety is never an excuse for inaction. Yet be assured that this administration's actions will always be weighed against the people's liberties. You will never see a mandate against individual choice. You will never see me agree with an infringement of personal rights, no matter how morally or socially responsible the current conditions might justify those infringements. Liberty and freedom is not something that you can use as a blanket when it's convenient or a shield when it's not. And because I know that these words are being received differently across the political spectrum, let me be a tad more succinct in my meaning. The responsibility to protect yourself in a pandemic falls on you, period. As your president, I will do everything that I can to ensure that you have the tools to protect yourself and will make recommendations that are as up-to-date and informed as possible, but the responsibility falls to you as a matter of personal liberty. What this means in the grand scheme of America is that neither myself or governors or judges or mayors, sheriffs, or even your neighbor should be mandating a damn thing. Understand and respect personal liberty. But also understand this is not an authorization to chastise anyone's sense of personal liberty, no matter how wildly it differs from your own. How have we let the issue of wearing a mask become such a political wedge in our society? I'll tell you how. It's because we turn to our political establishment to tell our neighbors what to do. When did that become acceptable? The government has become that person. When they hear a child getting spanked in public, they stick their head over and ask threateningly, did you just spank that child? The government has become our own overbearing Karen. That's not what government is or should be. How many times are we going to do this? Every single time we turn to the government to mandate personal liberty, the outcome is always the same. A two-sided rift of blind obedience or knee-jerk opposition. This is one of the most detrimental conditions our country faces, and we do this to ourselves time and again and learn nothing. Now listen carefully here, because this is very important. If your local grocery store says you need to wear a mask before you step inside, wear a mask. It's as simple as that. If we are going to be respectful to one another's personal liberties, that respect extends to the commercial establishments we rely on. Believe it or not, there are already lots of conditional factors in play everywhere you go. It's that old no shoes, no shirt, no service sign, but they've just added no masks to the end of it. So please, continue to comment and criticize my administration and myself if you feel we aren't meeting the challenges of COVID-19 in regards to providing the tools or information needed for effective response. But asking me to mandate lockdowns, quarantines, or any type of economic shutdown is a non-starter. If nothing else, COVID-19 has certainly exposed some of the pitfalls and shortcomings of our system. But mandating a quarantine or any sort of economic lockdown within the confines of our system is just irresponsible. Now, going forward, expect me to leave the states to their own devices. The focus here will be to facilitate the dissemination of accurate, non-politicized information. I ask the media to be intellectually honest when analyzing the actions of me and my administration, and to communicate with their respective audiences in clear and unbiased voices. This is a tall request, I understand. Despite the political and social turmoil that is burning across the country right now, COVID-19 should not be the gateway to some political rally cry. The burden of intellectual honesty I therefore also place on America as a whole. There are so many issues and factions of political divide to choose from in America, such as the luxury of living here. But if you must latch on to an issue for the basis of political cheerleading, please pick something other than the one thing that so clearly transcends the pettiness of political ideological lines. Know that we are working hard in every capacity to effectively deal with this pandemic. But know that there is no ultimate solution or easy answer to this or any similar situation that will ever come from me or any other government entity. This is the epitome of a collective action problem, and having to sift through the political motivations does nothing other than to force us all to wade through the political muck in a half-hearted attempt to get on the same page. I'm not asking you to separate your political ideology from your interpretation or perceptions of COVID. I am simply asking you to understand that creating political-based divisions surrounding COVID helps no one. Regardless of how this message is received, however, I and my administration will continue to fight against COVID in this manner. Thank you, and good luck to us all. And then the press corps would a little bit, and then I would say, questions? And then hopefully I wouldn't have to chew their heads off because they didn't hear anything that I just said. So the numbers I read at the beginning are a few days old, and by the time you are listening to this podcast, who knows how old those numbers will be? Who knows where we will be at as a world and as a nation or states in as far as our numbers are concerned? But the statistical percentages remain pretty constant. The death rates are relatively low when all things are considered. The infection rate's pretty low when all things are considered. That 16 million reported infection cases, that's on a total population of 7 billion people. 7 billion people. And what did we do in response to these low probabilities? We panicked. We panicked. As a society, we seem to be so eager to panic at the drop of a hat. That's as a collective society. Of course, there are the hardliners on both sides who are just like, this is a conspiracy. The government's trying to take my guns or what have you. Okay. There, whatever stereotypical voice that I might use, that might be disparaging to some specific individual you have in your head. But understand that sort of mentality is not exclusive to the left or the right. There are people who do not trust this government. There are people who see conspiracies around every corner. We have people who believe the earth is flat, for God's sakes. And you're going to try to come at a pandemic from a state of fear, then of course you're going to get a million different reactions. Now, unfortunately, our politicians, you heard it in the intro, a lot of our politicians will initially downplay the fear, right? But once the fear cranks in, whew, they will ride that to kingdom come, and they will ride it to whatever political points they can make. And it's really, really, really disappointing to watch people just feed into that. Because you don't like Trump or you don't like Biden or what have you. This is a global pandemic and people are dying and you're worried about who's going to win in November. There is not a single political person that I would pick to lead us during this time. Not one. I could probably throw a dart at a dartboard full of congressional names and probably come up with someone a little bit better than either Trump or Biden. I could probably flip open a phone book and drop my finger on it and find someone who would lead us better than Trump or Biden. My biggest disappointment with Donald Trump, and I shouldn't be surprised, I mean, the guy's a fucking douchebag, is his absolute and total inability to step up and be presidential. There is something a lot different than what I'm doing to you now, talking to you candidly on my personal podcast as a human being, than stepping in front of the microphone and being a leader, being the president of the United States of America. We still are the leading superpower on the planet. And millions, if not billions of people dream about coming here because this is still the land of opportunity. But President Trump is incapable of stepping in front of a microphone and acting presidential. You heard my speech at the beginning, right? That's my speech. That's my presidential moment. I'm going to step up to the microphone. I'm going to give it to you factually. I'm going to give it to you, you know, what's the word? I'm going to give it to you with a little bit of eloquence and a little bit of, a little bit of pizzazz, intellectual pizzazz. But once the speech is over, this is what you're going to get. You know, if a reporter wants to ask me if I have blood on my hands, I would chew that guy or girl a new ass. A new ass. Because if a reporter wants to ask if the President of the United States has blood on his hands, that is a pure, pure, unhindered, unadulterated, politically motivated question. And what the fuck are you doing asking that sort of question when you seem to be so concerned that people are dying? The bigger concern you have when you ask that question is getting your goddamn candidate behind the podium. And if you really, really, really think that Joe fucking Biden would be a better leader than Donald Trump right now, you are out of your fucking mind. Joe Biden is knocking on death's door. And if we were lucky, COVID would take them both out. If we were lucky, COVID would take out half of Congress because they're all old oligarch douchebags. All of them. But we're not lucky. What we're susceptible to day after day after day is a perpetual state of fear that is just cranked up by the media and our pathetic leaders. All of them. Nancy Pelosi, as she shakes because she's so old and frail, a stiff wind is going to knock her over. While the president fiddles. How about you just come at the problem with solutions instead of finger pointing? Hindsight is 2020. Hindsight is 2020. And we also seem to be driven by this foresight that the models are giving us, that the experts are giving us. Let me let everyone in on a big, well-known fact of these models. The models are programmed by humans. And humans don't know everything to put into the models. So the models that they generate are generated based on current knowledge and understanding. And when you have something like, coronavirus or let's say global warming, and you don't have all the facts, you don't have all the information because that information and those facts are constantly changing almost on an hourly basis, you cannot make accurate predictions. But it seems okay that we take these horrific predictions and run them to the hills. Millions and millions and millions of people were going to die from this. If we didn't do anything, then, you know, half the world's there were probably like 4%. Let's see the current death rate is 4%. Where's my calculator? Let's calculate these numbers. The models told us millions and millions of people were going to die. Millions if we did nothing. Well, guess what? because of what we did, millions are still dying, but dying in ways that you didn't predict, right? People aren't going to their doctors. They're not going to their dentists. People aren't getting the care they needed that would have saved their lives in other aspects. People are succumbing to their own depression and putting a gun in their mouth. But no, no, let's do the panic. Let's do the shutdown. Let's freak the fuck out over a virus with a 4% mortality rate. Let's shut it all down for a virus that has an infection rate globally of 0.22. Let's shut it all down. Let's just shut it all down for a scary virus that has a global mortality rate of 0.009. If you are a living soul inhabiting this planet, a human being, you have a 0.009 chance of dying from COVID-19. Everyone feel good about those shutdowns now? Everyone feel good about the tanking of the global economy? Everyone feel good about that? Everyone's cool with that, right? 0.009. Trump is not without blame. This could have been a rally around the flag event. My guess is that Trump is so unknowledgeable of political terminology and methodology that he has no idea what that even means. I would wonder if he's ever even heard it. There are moments in history that are fleeting where you can truly unite people, where you can truly lead. And this is one of those moments. And everything involved in this moment, everything that's happening in this moment, the riots, the police brutality, the anarchists and the anti-fascists and the BLM and the marches, all of these events are all potential rally around the flag. And if you're not familiar with that, that term, because a lot of people aren't, you know, it's a political term, and it basically means that it's that event that transcends individuality. It reminds us that we are one country, one people, one planet. And I think that beyond all of the deaths, the tragic amount of deaths, 645,000 worldwide, that is a very tragic number. And for many people, that is a very real number. That's unfortunate. But what is more unfortunate is our complete, at least in the U.S., I don't know if people around the world would agree with me, but what is more unfortunate is just the complete and utter lack of leadership. All right, end of rant, because politics is hard, folks. Politics is really hard to be honest about. Politics is really hard to be knowledgeable about. Politics is very hard to get right. There is no right answer. And I am not saying that Trump was wrong to shut down the economy. I am saying that I would not have done it. Period. This podcast, I will do my best to not go on rants like that very often, because what I don't want this podcast to be is a talking head. I don't want to be another talking head. There are already hundreds of sources that you can go to if you want to hear some mindless talking head, either perpetuate your own little political ideological bubble or what have you. You know, there's talk radio, there's 24-hour news, there's blogs, there's websites, there's celebrities, there's whatever. Right? Everyone does have an opinion. How informed and how well measured that opinion is differs. And hopefully, as the president, I should very much have the most informed and well-measured opinion out there. So when I come to you and say, folks, I understand what the models say, but I am not going to do what some of these other places are doing. Hopefully the leadership that I instill will not only calm people and prepare them for difficulties, but will impart some trust. There's a catch-22 with the models and the doing nothing, because they get to fall back on this caveat of, well, we did something. That's why the models didn't come true. None of the models ever come true. None of them. So I will be the talking head for me. I will be my own self analysis. I'll give you my own self analysis. And I want you to understand intimately why I think the way I think and what information I'm looking at. And of course, right now I'm just Jiminy Jojo, the idiot circus boy, talking into a microphone and hoping someone's listening. But as the president, I'll have access to a lot of people and a lot of information, and I will be able to come to the podium and give it to you straight. I understand that we're in an election cycle right now, and unfortunately that makes it worse. The media has their chip on the table. The media used to be relatively unbiased. I don't know that they've ever been completely unbiased, but the just blatant disregard for actually reporting the news is pretty, not only unconscionable, but just breathtaking, and not in a good way. The story last week was that Trump is sending in these federal police because he is doing a dry run to take over the country in an autocratic fashion. So because I am my own talking head, let's look at some of the points that I made during my speech before I went off script and started ranting. I do have a temper, folks. I do. And I make no apologies for it in a lot of regards. So let's look first and foremost at the mandates that are going around the country. So the first thing that we should look at in regards to my speech, as I'm being my own talking head, is my view on executive orders. The executive order exists in two different planes, that of the federal and that of the state. The executive order comes from the executive officer of that particular office, be it the president of the United States or the governor of any particular state. Now, on the federal level, and of course this is my main concern, being the president of the United States and all, there is absolutely no clause that clearly defines an executive order for the president of the United States. What is in the U.S. Constitution is a clause that talks about the president having the power of faithfully executing the law. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed and shall commission all the officers of the United States. This clause is basically making the president the CEO of any organization created by Congress. Congress has the ability and the authority to create an office that assumes the responsibilities that Congress wants to give it. Basically, Congress has all of these responsibilities. Every responsibility that you can think of actually belongs to Congress. Congress, of course, being the House and the Senate. But Congress has the power to create an entity that represents those responsibilities. This is how we have the FDA. This is how we have the FDC. This is how we have the FAA, all of them, all the alphabet soups, the CDC, the FBI, the yada yada, all of those entities that you can think of operating at the federal level, they were created at the federal level because Congress knew that it needed to create laws and have policies in these realms. And because there are so many angles and so many things to think about, they create these specific entities to handle them. And what the president does in regards to those entities is that the president then becomes the CEO of those entities. The president is the CEO for the CDC. He is the CEO of the FAA, so on and so on. Each regulatory authority then gives itself powers pretty much as they see fit. Once a regulatory body becomes its own entity, it can grant itself just about any power it wants to. And this all of this power comes from the almighty Commerce Clause. Everything is granted by the all-encompassing Commerce Clause. In Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution states that the Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. The Commerce Clause is probably the single most powerful line in the entire Constitution in that it seems to give the federal government very, very broad sweeping authority. We won't get into that right now. That is its own topic that can cover many, many, many podcasts. So in a nutshell, Congress creates these tiny little companies for regulatory purposes, and the president is supposed to oversee these tiny little companies, or not so tiny, in the case of many of our regulatory bodies. But the president oversees these companies and makes sure that they are doing what they're supposed to do. Having these regulatory bodies in place is not necessarily a bad thing. There are plenty of things that I will tell you that the government should regulate. And there are plenty of things that I don't think they should regulate as much, and there are other things that I don't think they should regulate at all. And that's the heart of the issue, is who is your CEO? If you leave these processes in place, well, then they change depending on who your CEO is. Today it's Trump, tomorrow it's Biden, hopefully tomorrow it's me. Well, I'm going to have an entirely different set of priorities and rules that I want my companies to abide by. And because I am the CEO of these companies, I absolutely can make that happen. If I have one of my regulatory bodies do something that Congress doesn't like, Congress can't do anything about it aside from actually passing new laws that changes the way that those regulatory bodies work. This is how President Reagan was able to fire all of the air traffic controllers back in the 80s when they went on strike. Because he is the CEO of the company, and there are laws governing how federal employees can or cannot strike. And so basically Reagan was like, well, that's illegal, you're all fired. So in regards to the CDC does have power to issue quarantines and talk about national health emergencies and whatnot. But me as the president, given the set of circumstances that I have seen and witnessed and all the data that I've looked at, I would not have called or I would not have joined the call for any sort of quarantine or economic shutdown, period. Our system is not set up to handle what we did. And we overreacted based on a few of the models and based on looking at a few of the European countries. But if you look harder at the numbers, like Italy is more or less the powder keg where everyone panicked. People were getting sick really fast in Italy. People were dying really quick in Italy. But look at Italy. Look really hard at Italy. Italy is a country, and it's roughly the size of New Mexico. Italy has a population of 60 million people. Guess how many people live in New Mexico? About 4. So that tells you, first and foremost, that Italy has an extremely dense population. You know what the other factor in Italy is? They have the oldest population throughout Europe. The average age in Italy is 45 years old. That's not even in the danger group, but they have an older population. They have a denser population. The average age in the U.S. is 38 years old, and our population is really, really spread out. If you want to actually look at Italy and do some sort of comparison shopping, well, that's one of the great things about America, right, is we have all of these different experiments going on at any one time. We have 50 different cases that we can look at. Well, what's going on in New Mexico? Well, what's going on in New York? So it's more fair to compare New York to Italy than it is to compare the U.S. to Italy. And in fact, that's one of the major gripes I have with when I talk about intellectual honesty. It is absolutely not fair to analyze the U.S. as a conglomerate when you compare it to some of these tiny, tiny European countries. You know, America has 320 million people in it spread out over a landmass that is larger than most countries. Most countries. Like I said, most of our states are your entire European countries, for crying out loud. It is not fair to do a apples and oranges comparison. We do not need to throw a blanket shutdown over the entire country when those economic and geographic and pandemic parameters are not the same from community to community. Why would I tell New York and why would I tell New Mexico the exact same thing?
Both of you gotta shut down. You gotta shut it down. This thing's gonna go away.
That makes no sense whatsoever. Of course, as the president, you want to be out front and you want to present as much information as possible, but creating a blanket solution to a problem that is anything but universal is idiotic. Government is not here to protect you from yourself. And we as a society need to trust ourselves. Government is not here to protect you from yourself. It's that simple. Whether it be at the federal level or the state level or local level or whatever, governments have to trust in their citizens. Now, I know that's a tall order since I am one of the biggest advocates of people are stupid, but government is not here to protect you from being stupid. And let me just clarify that. When I say stupid, we all do stupid stuff. Everybody. I think Einstein was married twice. That was pretty dumb. But we all do stupid things, okay? There's a difference between someone who is actually mentally challenged than just somebody having a brain fart or someone who is being narrow-minded or tunnel-visioned or whatever, okay? Big difference. We've all cut someone off in traffic unknowingly. We've all made a left-hand turn from right-hand lane. We've all done something stupid. But we shouldn't need a global pandemic to remind us how to wash our hands. And it's not the government's responsibility to remind us to wash our hands. It's your mother's responsibility. My mother was a just drill sergeant on that. We weren't allowed to come to dinner before we washed our hands. Maybe that's why I haven't gotten COVID. Who knows? My administration's stance will always be that we are not here to mandate your personal safety. I trust you as an individual, even though I think you do stupid stuff from time to time. I'm the president of the United States and the camera is going to be on me all the time. You're bound to see me say something or do something stupid. It's inevitable. But I trust you to take care of yourself and I trust you to respect your neighbor and vice versa. I trust the companies and the establishments of this country to take care of their employees, and I trust those same establishments to take care of their customers. Because killing your customers and your employees is not good business. That might sound pretty callous and pretty cold, but it is just a baseline statement. I'm not trying to create some sort of emotional rift here. Right? We want to save lives. I'm not saying that I want to dump COVID-19 in live batches through our schools and in our grocery stores. But I'm not here to create more chaos than a virus with a 4% mortality rate is going to cause. Period. That's not a public health emergency to me. The very definition of pandemic tells you nothing about the lethality. Is that the right word? the mortality rate or the infectious rate of any virus. Pandemic just means that the virus is so far spread, it is a global event. That's it. That's all it means. The seasonal cold could be classified as a pandemic if you wanted to. More than likely. I don't know. I'll check with my, my CDC, the secretary of the CDC on that one. And I understand where people are coming from when they come at it from an emotional standpoint. Okay. I don't want to be the pure Vulcan logic guy, but every decision that I make will be weighted heavily in reality. And the reality is that our system cannot hold. Our system is not built to handle what we did to it. There is no system. We were talking about flattening the curve on our healthcare system. Well, the fact that our healthcare system can't handle a gigantic pandemic, that's what it is. It is what it is. To try to flatten the curve in New York, they sent elderly patients back to the old folks' homes so they could just die. 32,000 dead. Way to go, Cuomo. We were so worried about overloading our medical staff. That's what they're there for. What kind of logic is that? Your job is to treat people. If something happens and suddenly you got to take on a caseload bigger than you're used to, that's just what it is. You ever watch ER? Remember the episode where they were all farting around all day one day in the ER? There was nothing to do, nothing going on. And then suddenly there was like a 3-4 school bus pileup. That was a great fucking episode. That ER was overwhelmed right then and there. But nobody ever says if the Greyhound bus crashes into a median, we got to make sure we flatten the curve on the amount of people going to the ER. What? That makes no sense. Think about some of the events that we have in this country. Think about Christmas Eve. Think about Black Friday. We don't give a crap when we about flattening the curves on those days. If you go into a restaurant and the servers are all sitting around doing nothing, and then a sorority bus pulls up with 40 people and they pile into one restaurant, nobody's at the front door and saying, "Hey, some of you got to go across the street. We got to flatten the curve. We can't have all you people coming here at one time." I understand the burden and the expectations that were put on our medical staff during this time, but get the fuck in there and make your overtime. I'm not shutting it down. I'm not quarantining shit. And people are going to obviously say, "Well, what if someone you know gets sick? What if someone you know dies?" Well, as luck would have it, I had this conversation just a few weeks ago. And someone asked me that very question. "Well, what would you do if your mother got sick?" And I'll tell you what I would do, because I told my mother this. I told my mother that I wouldn't shut down the economy just so she could hang out for another 5 or 6 years. That's exactly what I told her, folks. Yeah, I do love my mother. That's exactly what I told her. My grandmother is 98 and my mother is 76, right? 78, no, she's 74. I don't know. How many of us know the age of our mom? I think she's 72. I don't know. I'll find out. But my grandmother is 98 and my mother is 74-ish. And I told my mother, I told her that I would be very heartbroken and very sad if grandma and my mother got sick and died. But I would not shut down the economy to save them. And I'm sure a lot of you are just can't fathom that. And I'm sure there's a lot of you that can. And it's not because you haven't been affected by COVID. It's because you understand the consequences of what we did. There are a lot of flaws in our system. And if nothing else, COVID has exposed those flaws spectacularly. I work for an airline. I won't mention them by name, but I will just give you a clue and say they are the most American airline there is. And we just laid off a whole bunch of people in my department, about 30 people left. And some of them are having trouble getting their unemployment and worried about if they're going to be able to make their rent. Some of them had to go into early retirement and wonder about, are they going to have health care? And it's not over. I told my mother that the ones that die are the lucky ones, because they don't have to stick around and deal with picking up the pieces. And that's the cold, hard truth. That's where I stand on that as your president. And I make no apologies. And I will tell you over and over again that as your president, you don't have to read between the lines. And there's certainly definitely no lines to read between it here. I care about Americans. I care about the planet. And I don't want people to die. But there is a much, much, much bigger picture to think about when you are worried about a virus that kills 4% of the people it infects. Not even 4% of the population, 4% of the people it infects. Is this thing much more deadly than the common cold or some of these other instances? Absolutely. There is no debate. This is not the 19th COVID drug. It just happened to be discovered in 2019. A lot of people think this is the 19th COVID drug. It's not that we've never seen a coronavirus before, but this is a new one and it just happens to be discovered in 2019. The federal government is here to help the states in whatever capacity they need, be it the medical ships or the extra supplies or whatnot. I would be on that like gangbusters, the Defense Production Act and whatnot. I would have flipped the economy overnight. That's an easy trigger to pull. Absolutely. It's kind of like going to war. And again, it really takes me back to the rally around the flag event. You're not going to get someone to rally around an economic shutdown when they're staring down the barrel of losing their job. How are they going to rally around that? Oh, thanks. I'm so glad we kept the mortality rate below 4% in America. Now I got to spend the next 5 years getting my credit repaired because I was out of work. We had one of the best economies that this country has ever seen. And in a matter of, 4 or 5 months, this virus took it down to its knees. And it's going to be a long time before we recover. And hopefully when we do recover, we start to make those necessary changes so we won't have to face this sort of problem again. And by that, I don't mean the next virus, because the next virus will come. But the next time the virus does come, maybe we will be a little bit more prepared to do what is needed. And I will be more ready to issue that quarantine and to shut the economy down. But we got a long way to go to get there. So that's my administration, where I stand at the federal level. That doesn't mean that I would be against a state mandating any sort of lockdown or masks or anything like that. You get really shady when you're talking about public emergencies. When to declare them, how to declare them, what you're declaring them over, and the laws vary state to state. I'm here in Texas where, what's his face? Abbott has locked us down and then he opened us up and then he was like, maybe I'll lock you down again, and then here mask mandates and yada yada. But the states, I would leave the states to their own devices. The system in America is that the closer you go to the individual, the better it is. The federal government is the furthest you can get from the individual citizen. So any decision made by the federal government on behalf of the individual citizen is the worst decision that can be made. Unless that individual citizen is doing something stupid, which we all do, which I've already said, which I'll say over and over and over. But it's a locality, it's a county, it's a city, it goes up. It's this, you know, concentric ring. And the further and further away you get from the individual, the more atrocious the decisions come. My job is to make sure the states have what they need from me and the federal government. And it's not a mandate. It's not a quarantine. It's not an economic shutdown. And I really don't know. And off the top of my head, I honestly can't think, as I sit here, of a pandemic scenario and where I would call for that to happen. Because once again, no matter how bad the virus is, like Ebola has a dang, some outbreaks of Ebola have had a 50% mortality rate. Now, if Ebola was as infectious as the common cold or as COVID-19, we'd all be really, really fucked. We'd be really scared. But even then, I would not call for a national economic shutdown. It's not because I don't think that an economic shutdown and a national quarantine wouldn't slow the spread of the virus. It's because, again, I am as far away from the individual as I can possibly be. And I have little right and even less knowledge to make a decision for somebody in New Mexico or California or Montana. Can you imagine Montana? Montana is one of our largest states, and it's also the least populated state in the country. Let me make sure. Oh, no, it's Wyoming. Can you imagine me mandating for Wyoming what I need to mandate for California? California is the most populated state in the U.S., almost at 40 million. And Wyoming is almost as equal in size to California, and it has less than 600,000 people there. Why would I, as a president, create this blanket mandate for all the states? I hope that you can understand my logic and my reasoning. And please do not mistake ever my logic or reasoning as an absence of empathy. I love this country. I love its people. I love this planet. It's where I keep all my stuff. I stole that from the tick. But you can't let your decisions be governed by pure emotion and empathy. We see it time and time and again where people who do that, they don't make the right decision. We know in our own personal life, in our hearts, that if you make a decision based purely on emotion and empathy, it's often, well, at least in the political spectrum, especially, if you are making decisions and policies on empathy and emotion alone, you get things like the Green New Deal. And the Green New Deal, I was actually reading it today, is nothing more than a virtue signaling, non-binding resolution. And it has no basis in reality. Because there's no actual policy in that pamphlet. It's basically a pamphlet. It's just, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and la 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 la. Everything will be great. And that's more or less what the quarantine was shopped as. But I feel like I've cut in a little bit. And I'm veering more to a general talking head at this point. I can't do that. I don't want to do that. That's not what this podcast is about. As your president, you would have my deepest sympathies and my deepest empathies. But you have to understand that as your president, I have an entire country to take care of. That's a huge, huge responsibility. And I feel very, very sad for the folks who have been personally affected by COVID directly through the death of a loved one. That's horrible. That's absolutely horrible. But no matter how tragic a COVID death is, there is just the bigger picture. And as president, I have to take care of the bigger picture. That has to be my priority. I've tried very, very, very hard throughout this entire episode not to say it, and I won't. I'll just let him say it.
Don't grieve him. Admiral. It is logical. The needs of the many outweigh
the needs of the few.
Or the one.
We all know this is true. We all know it's true. And though it's the Vulcan who says it and ultimately lives it, the probably the greatest symbol of pure logic that we have in pop culture, what's at the end of the day, what's more empathetic? Worrying about the one person or the 320 million people? I contend it's the latter. And that will be my position as your president. So don't forget to write my name in this November. I know it's been this has been a rough episode, and it's a little late in coming because I really wanted to get it right. I wanted to do a little bit of extra research, and I realized that it's more important for me to try to get things right, even though I still ended up getting something wrong in this episode. My philosophy isn't just intellectual honesty, it's also integrity. You have to be honest with yourself and with the people you are talking to. If you make a mistake, you have to own that mistake. So let's say I'm the president right now. We didn't shut the economy down, and the death rate is triple what it is now. This episode would be a lot different, but I can tell you that I would stand by my decision, right or wrong. The integrity part comes from admitting if you were wrong. Right? Nobody cares if you're right. If you're right, you move on to the next question. You move on to the next chapter, the next round. If you're wrong and you're not willing to admit that you're wrong, then you can't move on. Leadership is not necessarily about making the right decision versus the wrong decision. Leadership is about making the decision. You have to commit to a decision, even if it might not be the right one. You have to make a decision based on the best information that you have, and you have to commit to that decision. But you also have to commit to the fact that if it's wrong, it's wrong. And as soon as you realize it's wrong, you have to do the left turn, the right turn, the 180. That's what leadership is. That's integrity. Knowing when you're wrong, knowing when you have to make that turn. Do you really think that any of our elected officials have integrity? Have you seen Trump ever say he's wrong? Have you seen Biden ever say he's wrong? Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, anybody? Has anyone stood up and said, oh shit, I should have done this? Yeah, think hard. The answer is pretty easy. Because I'm willing to bet that if you have seen a politician actually apologize or admit they were wrong, they were doing it for one of two reasons: to save their career or to gain some pandering points. That's not integrity. So I'm not going to produce these podcasts on any sort of hard timeline. Remember, I am just an army of one at the moment, and so I need to make sure that my podcasts are of the highest quality that I can possibly produce. And that won't always lend itself to a weekly or bi-weekly schedule. I do have a day job, as I mentioned earlier, working for the most American airline in the country. And I do have somewhat of a private life, or, you know, whatever. Not much of one. Regardless, I want to put out quality over quantity. And unless there are more pertinent issues of the day or current events happening, next full episode, I want to start diving into some policies that you can expect from my presidency. And I'm going to start with the most important policy that I can possibly think of, and that is term limits for our Congress. Oh, yeah. We're going to start with looking at the Constitution and what amendments we are lacking, because boy, do we need to change up the Constitution some. And that's the great thing about the Constitution, that it can be changed. It's not a living document, but it is editable. They made it to be edited. So we need to edit the Constitution, and we'll get into that on the next full presidential episode, the full podcast episode. So I can't tell you exactly when that episode will be out, but feel free to email me with any questions or any comments, concerns, or any amendments you want to add. Of course, I am Adam Deaver. It's POTUS@POTUSPC.com. Email me questions, what have you. Leave comments. Engage, folks. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Facebook. Before we get into the amendments, I will be doing another recommendation episode. I do enjoy those because we do need a break between these harder political episodes. And I'm going to be doing a book review for this next one. I'm going to be looking at a book by David Goggins called Can't Hurt Me. It's a fantastic book. It's a it's an autobiography, but it's a more of a self-help autobiography. It's really great. We will talk about that one next time. So be on the lookout for that one. And just remember, folks, that these are really, really difficult times. And I'm sure that a lot of what I said in this episode has invoked some visceral responses. And they might be agreeable responses or disagreeable responses. Some of the things I said might have just caused you to be angry or to hate what I've said. But believe it or not, from my perspective, that's a good thing. Because I'm not here to pander to you. I'm not here to placate you. I am not here to give you the same old bullshit promises that we get from our leaders and our politicians time and time and time again. I will always be as honest as I possibly can be with you, and I expect the same in return. If we're not honest with each other, then we can't talk about these things. We can't talk about COVID. We can't talk about racism. We can't talk about police brutality if we're not honest with each other and with ourselves. But there is no issue in America today that can't be solved tomorrow. Just remember that. I will always believe that. So, everyone take care of themselves. Be safe. Good luck. And live long and prosper.